I'm Liz Grossman.
I'm Rachel Gilman-Rischel.
And I'm Molly Each. You're listening to the Between Bites podcast, a nonprofit food-inspired storytelling series. We feature first-person stories from chefs, restaurateurs, writers, and others in the food and drink industry. Episodes are recorded live in Chicago bars and restaurants. We hope you enjoy.
Okay, our next reader has been a staple in the Chicago journalism community for years. Her work is amazing. She is the assistant managing editor of Crane Chicago Business, founding editor of the online journal Middle West. She's the former executive editor of Chicago Magazine and has written for Politico, Oprah's Magazine, and Elle Decor. And she's also taught writing and editing at Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism and DePaul. Please welcome Cassie Walker-Burke.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, guys. Okay, I'm really bad with microphones, so hopefully this, can you hear me okay? Okay, all right. They say there is a first time for everything. And tonight, I'm gonna tell you about the first time I was bullied on the internet. And it was by a chef who had much more ambition and ego than me. But before I go into all of that, it helps to understand what I know and what I did not know at the time. Here's what I know. I grew up in Alabama, and much of that time was spent on the Gulf Coast and in the Alabama Delta. I know how to bait blue crabs in wood traps. I know how to boogie board until you hit the sand and you get rough, like a rough red spot on your chest. And I know good seafood. And I know, in particular, a good shrimp cocktail. A good shrimp cocktail is really simple. It's shrimp and ice and lemon and a lot of really spicy cocktail sauce. And it's served lukewarm, like the shrimp. And yes, lukewarm. And hear me out on this, okay? Because I know this is maybe controversial. But for the motions that deliver the best shrimp cocktail, they start in my mind about an hour or so before it's actually delivered to the table. That's when the shrimp is bought from a boat in Bayou La Batrie. That's Forrest Gump. If you've ever seen that, that's Bayou La Batrie. Or down Old Fort Morgan Way, if you know the Gulf Coast at all. It's driven home. It's plopped for barely minutes into a big pot with the cheapest beer my dad has, boiling water in Old Bay. And it's scooped out with a long-handled slotted spoon. And it's plunged mercilessly and very quickly into a bath of cold water. And then it's served. And while you may disagree, a shrimp cocktail is best right after this icy cold baptism. That's when you still feel a little bit of warmth underneath the shell, like a blanket. And it's not something that should be prepared in advance. And it's not something that should be stored in a cooler. And this much I know. And while I'm versed in the cuisine of the Deep South, I also know that since I uprooted myself from the mud and the muck of the Alabama Delta and I moved to Chicago in 2001, that my small culinary galaxy has expanded into this vast universe. And I have a deep, deep respect for the risk-laden work of a chef, and I never, ever want to end up in an internet war with one. But I did. The invitation arrived in the summer of 2010. I was, at the time, the culture editor of Chicago Magazine, and it was my job to figure out how to cover the summer festival season for an erudite readership, the kind, you know, that lives in the high-rises and the well-heeled suburbs. And besides real estate, the one thing our readers cared about was food. And I had received an invitation to a tasting for a brand new concept, and this was a chef-driven food court at Lollapalooza. And I mean, the idea was smart, right? You showcase the city's culinary talent in one of the premier events of the summer. And who cares if most of the attendees are sneaking in Tito's in their water bottles? The city's brightest culinary lights deserve to shine there as much as its bands and its parks, and let's be honest, our politicians. And so I went to this tasting, arriving at the restaurant of the chef in charge of Chowtown for a sampling of what he and a few other well-known chefs were going to offer in their punk rock version of The Taste of Chicago. And there was a lobster corn dog with aioli, and pork belly buns with pickled vegetables, and a fried egg-topped beef slider. And there was a shrimp cocktail. I decided to write a quippy little web piece that rated each offering on taste and festival friendliness,
And as an experienced Lollapalooza goer, I felt like I had plenty of expertise in that regard. I had logged many, many summers crammed into Grant Park in my little tiny backpack, with my little notebook. And I had been there with about 200,000 other people. I had eaten my way through previous year's food courts, and I had checkmarked many of the other rites of passage. I'd gotten kicked in the butt at a show, I'd stolen a trash bag from a garbage can so I could stand in the rain, and I'd gotten so drunk I cried after I turned in my copy. And I could not square the reality of that hot, crowded, crazy festival with the experience of fresh seafood from the boat back home. And perhaps that's the limits of my imagination talking, but I've gone deep sea fishing and turned red on the boat, as red as a snapper that's caught. I've helped my grandmother ladle gumbo out of a white ceramic pot she kept the shells on, and so you'd see the crab legs sticking out and it looked like the pot would just scurry away if you scared it. And I've peeled more than my weight of fresh shrimp. The Lollapalooza shrimp cocktail was a single fat prawn sticking out of a cocktail, cup of cocktail sauce, like a big, fat, fleshy finger. And it was not at all like the small Gulf shrimp that I had grown up eating as a child. But that point didn't even make the write-up, to be fair. As I wrote after the tasting, the shrimp tasted fresh, and the peach-infused cocktail sauce, it had a lovely kick. But when it came to festival friendliness, and this is my crime, I wrote, quote, "Shrimp at a hot summer festival, nah, end quote. After all, couldn't fresh seafood in a festival in the hot sun equal food poisoning, which equals sudden death, possibly? This did not go over well. I should reiterate here that there are plenty of things that I don't know about that you chefs out there do. I don't know how much sweat and soul it takes to open up a restaurant, or how hard you have to work to build an impenetrable force field so that you can keep out the mediocre reviews, or worse, no reviews at all. I don't know how hard it is to develop a menu for Lollapalooza, and I sure as hell don't know how hard it is to try to have an $11 dish that you cook on basically a glorified Bunsen burner in the middle of Grant Park. And I certainly don't know how it feels to have somebody publicly poo-poo your shrimp cocktail. Shortly after the piece went live, my phone rang and I was being called a hack by the chef in charge of Chowtown's manager. And then the tweet happened. "Fuck you, Chicago Magazine." And mere minutes passed and a tweet was lobbed back from our social media manager, not me. "Only if you buy us dinner first." I stayed silent as the bomb went off, with chef in charge of Chowtown writing to the Windy City and Grub Street with plenty to say about the sycophant nature of food writers in general, and then my blog post in particular, and then me. He likened my writing to that of a member of the JV yearbook team and said that I had donned the garb of a fourth-rate Joan Rivers at the Daytime Emmys. Any punch that I had delivered had certainly overwhelmingly been dealt back. And as hard as it is when somebody says something bad about your food, it's also really dispiriting to Google yourself and see the phrase fourth-rate Joan Rivers. He went on, seemingly railing to any publication that would listen, and the commenters piled on, seemingly forever debating the merits of whether it was ethical to review a pre-Lollapalooza tasting as if such a thing had ever existed before. And the point had been missed. The egos had found their audience, and then just like that, it was over. This was 8 years ago, and to be honest, I'd actually mostly forgotten about what happened until recently when a younger reporter at Crain's was getting trolled on Twitter for something she'd written, and she took the back and forth deeply, deeply personally. And she was so sad about it, and I just remember that feeling of that first time that you were deeply cut by the internet. It's like a first love or a first arrest. The details fade, but then now and again, that feeling is uprooted, surprising you with its ferocity. And now I've been trolled since on Twitter, and I've done my share of controversial reporting, but there is something deeply biting about the first time, particularly when it dawns on you that no, you can't scrub the internet. And don't worry, it didn't hurt the chef in charge of Chowtown. He has a TV show. And it didn't hurt me either. I mean, not really. I'm a working journalist, and I get paid to do reporting, and that's really cool. And I got married, and I have kids. And, you know, I'm 40, and I've traded Lollapalooza now for the more family-friendly pitchfork where the music's better anyway, and you can bring a chair. So it's all good. But, you know, I know a few more things now, and I won't bore you with them all, except to say, Twitter fights and comment wars are for suckers. Getting personally nasty on the internet isn't cool, it's just mean. And lastly, after having gone through all of this, I will 100% go to my grave saying a shrimp cocktail is a terrible fucking idea at Lollapalooza.
Our final reader is the chief dining critic of Chicago Magazine. He is the co-author of Everybody Loves Pizza, The Deep Dish on America's Favorite Food, and has also played college basketball in Ireland, assisted in an autopsy, and sumo wrestled in front of 20,000 people in New Jersey. In November, he released his first middle grade novel, Penelope March is Melting, a 2018 Illinois Reads New Book awardee. He lives in Hyde Park with his wife and three children. Please welcome Jeff Ruby.
It's a pleasure to be here, going after all these super creative and interesting people, many of whom I've passed judgment on over the years. So they may not laugh at anything I have to say here. I don't know. It was there 40,000 feet over the Sierra Nevadas in seats 22E and F that I knew we were in trouble. We were going down. It was going to be messy. No one could save us. My three-year-old had shit her pants. This kid eats a lot. She's always hungry. The meals go on forever. She's like Caligula or something, I don't know. Afterward, she rummages around like in the fridge. Can I get a snack? I'm like, you just ate. Can I have a snack? Those were, I think, were her first words. Can I have a snack? So it could have been the pork dumplings in Chinatown. Could have been the turkey and stuffing in Berkeley, samosas, pakoras, goldfish, yogurt squeezers, any other number of foods she devoured over this Thanksgiving weekend in the Bay Area. Or maybe it's just a virus. At that moment, I did not care. I just knew she was in the window seat. I was in the middle. The guy in the aisle looked like a professional wrestler. And my wife was not on this flight. It was 4 hours. It had just begun. The kid at this time was basically not in diapers, pretty much not in diapers anymore. And by pretty much, I mean she was our third child. We may have potty trained her at some point. I don't really remember. She might have done it herself. I don't know. I didn't really give a shit. But I still carried this diaper bag with me. And it included a change of clothes, which I was so proud of myself for bringing on this plane. Sorry to do this, I said to the wrestler dude over here, wherever he is. My kid's got to go to the bathroom. And he sort of slides out without really changing his expression. He might have smiled a little bit, I'm not sure. When you see a mother on an airplane, it's like, at the best, she's tolerated, but she's got to keep those kids quiet because everybody's like ready to pass judgment and pounce if they make the slightest bit of noise. See a dad on a plane. The guy's like a hero. It's like, guy's amazing. He's selfless. He gets pats on the back. People are buying me drinks. The flight attendant is like coming over to check in on me because it's so cute that I'm like even trying, you know? And all I'd done was plug in my two older kids to Harry Potter and then given the little one the sticker book and told her not to bother me for 4 hours. And just kind of hoped she'd leave me alone. But so as I'm leading her down the aisle to the bathroom, people were smiling at us. We're adorable. Getting her changed, a little messy. Glad I'm going last here. I should say nothing was solid, and those bathrooms are very small. And whatever the opposite of the Mile High Club is, that's what we did in that bathroom. It was really not good. So we go back to our seats. She's not looking great. This is a kid who's always hungry, and she is refusing the pretzels from the flight attendant. That's a bad sign. So I look over, and I'm like, hey, honey, if you feel like you need to poop again, can you please just let me know ahead of time? I'm like peaches and cream. I'm so nice. 20 minutes later, I smell something. It's not good. Do you need to poop? Yes. Did you already poop? Yes. Oh my God. So I scrounge through the diaper bag and it's got like 9 pockets because you know diaper bags are like made by women who know more than men and they're like ready for everything. I find somehow underneath a bunch of like, you know, crumbs and stuff, this unused diaper and a onesie that the kid had outgrown. And I'm like, this is perfect, man. This is great. This will do. The wrestler is asleep. So I'm like, I'm sorry to do this again, man. He didn't say anything. He gets up. He did that thing where like, he like, you know, like you make your pecs go like this. He did that to me. I was like, was that an insult? I don't know what that was. So the trip to the bathroom this time, it's even worse. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm so sorry. She's like really unhappy. I put the diaper on her. She's like, you and McGregor and that scene where he's trying to kick heroin in Trainspotting. She's like writhing around all over the place. And it gets everywhere. It's like in her hair. It's on her clothes. It's on my sweatshirt. It's like on the ceiling. It's in that little sink with the like little stopper in there, you know, like that. It is so disgusting. But somehow I get this diaper on her, get the onesie on her. I stuff the dirty clothes in that little hole there and head back to our seats. Like people are gonna know it wasn't me who did it, you know? So now we're in big, big trouble. Diaper bag's empty. We still got 2 hours left of the flight. The only thing between us and this brown hell is a stretched out Thomas onesie and 1/2 inch of interwoven fabric. It's nothing, nothing. So I'm looking for other parents around going, maybe, I wonder if I could borrow something from them or whatever. But they're all ignoring me because now I smell like a porty potty that's overturned a pitchfork or Lollapalooza or something, I don't know. And I'm like, maybe I could give her my shirt and like tuck it under her. Like I'm trying to figure out all this stuff. I turn around to my kids who are plugged in behind me into the Harry Potter movie and I say to the older one, I go, hey, how attached are you to that onesie you're wearing? Or that onesie, to that hoodie you're wearing? And she's like, well, wait, why? Does this have something to do with that smell? And I'm like, no. I'm just curious. And she's just like, yeah. She didn't want anything to do with me. The 3-year-old is looking miserable. She's a very sweet kid. She's trying her best, but and like, the more she stayed positive, the more my heart broke because she didn't want to make things uncomfortable for me. And I'm getting more firm with her. I'm going like, all right, we got no clothes left. And she's 3, she's like this big. We got no clothes left. I'm trying to reason with her. You've got to let me know if your stomach is feeling like a little topsy-turvy, you know, something like that. You feel like pooping, you're going to let me know, right? Promise? Okay, I promise. 5 minutes later, she's just leaking out of her, you know, it's flowing, it's gushing, it's like a babbling brook of shit. In this N22F. I'm just like, God. I turn and look at the wrestler, and he just kind of gets up. He doesn't do the peck thing or anything like that, but I rush the kid to the bathroom. I don't know what we're trailing behind us. I have no idea. I don't want to know. I should mention by this point, the bathroom is basically ours. Nobody's going back there. Like, we got dibs. The flight attendants have like set up their base of operations elsewhere. They're like over there. Like, it's ours. That back of the plane is ours. People in the back row are like, I knew we should have gotten on early. You know, like all this stuff. So, if anybody had been standing outside that bathroom and nobody was, they would have heard a grown man going, no! And like, why? And sobbing from her and from me. I'm like screaming at her and she's just a little kid sitting on the toilet. So I put her there and I, for like a very dark second, I think about just closing the door and going back to my seat. being like, would this be the worst moment in the history of parents if I did this? But like, I just couldn't deal with it anymore. So instead, I poke my head out the lavatory, and there happened to be a flight attendant standing there. And I go, I got a little bit of a problem here. And she looks me up and down, and she's like, yeah, 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 you do. And I explain what the issue was, which she pretty much already knew. And she kind of thought about it for a second, and then she goes, you know, I guess I could give her a flight attendant outfit. And I was so flustered, I go, is it her size? No, it's full size, she explained. And I still didn't get it, and I go, well, what would you wear? Like, I didn't deserve her help. A moment later, she presents me with this extra flight attendant outfit. I hold it up to the kid on the toilet, and she's like, no, 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 I won't wear that. It looks itchy. You're a poopy, poopy butt face, which I was pretty much at that moment. And I'm like pleading with her. I'm like, this is our last chance. Like, put it on. She puts it on. Somehow she put it on. We had to like, I mean, it's for a, you know, a grown woman. So we're like rolling up the bottom, like when you cuff your jeans, but the cuff is like bigger than she is. And by now, everyone in the back of the plane knows what's going on. And I'm like, I'm going to come out of this bathroom, and it's going to be like a riot. Instead, something amazing happened. They all knew, they all had heard what was going on. They all had smelled what was going on. And they were incredibly sympathetic to me. And it wasn't because I was a man. It was just like, I had been doing my best, and I had been failing miserably, and they saw this. And she was still kind of trying to smile and make the best of it. But when we got to our row and I've basically devolved into like a 6-foot pile of shit, the wrestler put his hand on my shoulder, the shoulder that didn't have the poop on it. And it's, he just goes, I have 3 grown kids, you're doing fine. And I was like, thank you so much. Like, it really meant a lot to me, because I was really nervous about this guy for some reason. So I begged my daughter. I'm like, we still got an hour and a half left. She has no idea what an hour and a half is. Like, it could be like 10 minutes, whatever. Like, could you please try? Please try for daddy, please, please? Okay, I'll try. For the last hour, we played with the sticker book that I'd given her, and somehow we made it. We made it, she didn't poop again. I don't know how it happened, but if she had sprung another leak, I probably would have gotten tackled by an air marshal. Like, I was in a bad, bad place. So we get to Midway, the 4 of us, my other 2 kids are like keeping their distance from us. Like, I'm the guy with the shitty sweatshirt and she's the kid with the flight attendant outfit. And there's my wife just beyond security standing there. And she sees me in a sweatshirt. I'm like all sweaty and shitty and wrung out and just looking terrible. And she's got this look like, yep, grown man on a plane with 3 kids, that's what it looks like. Like, she was not surprised, shocked, anything like that. Then she sees the kid, her face is pale, her hair is matted. She's like stumbling with this flight attendant outfit toward her, the Southwest Airlines logo on her. And before my wife can even open her mouth, the kid says 5 words, unexpected, but familiar, strangely reassuring under these circumstances. Can I have a snack? Thanks.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about us at between-bites.com and follow us on social media as Between Bites.